Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. Welcome to your preview of Chelsea's trip to Anfield on Sunday. Not a happy stomping ground for Chelsea in years gone by. But you know what is happy? It's the fact that we're back after an international break. Yes, we put our feet up. Yes, we enjoyed ourselves. Yes, we did everything that we needed to do in our lives. But me and Dan are back to give you everything you need to know about Chelsea Football Club and everything that we've missed over the past 2 weeks. So, Daniel, we've got a few things we can touch on first, but obviously we're going to do that standard bit of housekeeping that we need to do. Let's talk about the previous fixture. What were your thoughts on that game?
I'm not really on Twitter anymore, so I can't. I only gauge like my comment section and anecdotally people I speak to, but I wasn't that negative about the result. You know, it was interesting. I was in a unique place where I was actually in the Matthew Harding lower for once, sort of late notice. So I was there, and obviously it's a very different experience than my usual season ticket seat, which is a little bit more laid back, and I'm able to see a full view of the pitch. And I feel like when you're closer to the pitch, it's a more kind of visceral, emotional kind of game. It's a very different style of game. Obviously, I went back and watched it again. I was quite impressed by the way Chelsea responded to a situation that I think in previous years we wouldn't have, and we would have probably lost that game. Now, we didn't win that game, mm-hmm. but we came very close to winning that game. And I think it was just one of those days where Seltz has one of his greatest goalkeeping performances he's ever going to have in his career. I think we created more than enough to win the game, which to me kind of, I think if that game plays out again, do Chelsea score one of those opportunities? And also I think you kind of balance out with the fact that Forest themselves had late opportunities to win. So it's not like it was all one-way traffic and Forest deserved absolutely nothing from the game. So I guess it was a weird game, and you also factor in that Forest themselves so far this season have been pretty strong. They've only lost one game. They went to Anfield and won. So they're not a bad team. And even though, of course, they were down to 10 men, and usually you sit there and you think you should be taking advantage of that, I think there was still enough for me to kind of feel I can see us moving in the right direction. I mean, maybe am I being too positive? I don't know, but I didn't walk away from it feeling. I've walked away from like the 1-1 against Palace. I was a lot more concerned after that. The 2-0 against Man City, I was a lot more concerned after that. Even gave the home win against Servette 2-0. I was more concerned walking away from that than I was 1-1 against Forest.
No, I agree. I think there were certain elements of the game which were frustrating for me. I thought Jadon Sancho showing, you know, the cage footballer side of him a little bit too much. You know, one too many stepovers when there was a perfectly good opportunity to, you know, pass and move and then create the space with that amazing skill that he's shown over the past few games. I thought he was showing off a little bit too much. For me, I'm the same. You know, I look back and, you know, on the balance of things, as much as it was a frustrating result, I think it's one which, you know, we thought there was 3 points in the bag, Chelsea would be, you know, progressing onwards as they had been in the previous fixtures. You know, overall, it was on the balance of things, it was fairly even. And I think a big thing which people got annoyed by was Forrest's use of the dark arts. But for me, I appreciate that. They did what they needed to do to get the result. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they need to do when they come to Stamford Bridge. You know, that's not a detriment to them, by the way. That's not me saying that just because they're, you know, quote unquote smaller team, you know, that they need to cheat, as some people are putting it. It wasn't, because it's not cheating. But, you know, what they did was they just did everything they needed to win. Exactly. So, you know, they did everything they needed to try and get a result, just like they did at Anfield. And obviously, you know, hopefully we can use what they did almost as a bit of a template alongside balancing with our player. But obviously, we'll get into the Liverpool game much later on in the show. But obviously, that was 2 weeks ago now. That's fish and chip paper. You guys don't want to hear what we think about the Nottingham Forest game. We've got two much more pressing things to talk about. And we're going to save that one big one until the end of this section, because I know you're all going to be gagging for it. But before we do get into that, let's talk about the kits as well. So, obviously, big news coming out of Chelsea over the past few days. Nike aren't particularly happy with the shirt sales after seeing a dip in Chelsea's purchases. And they're slightly concerned And I think you can tell by the tone of my voice that that makes me quite happy, because Chelsea are into a 15-year shirt deal with them. I think we're about halfway through now. So Chelsea are potentially going to be struggling with that and Nike, which I would be such a crying shame if Adidas came calling back and gave us some decent kits again. But Dan, I mean, I saw your video very briefly on the kit stuff, and I think you raised some very good points. I think, look, £85 for a kit, which, quite frankly, is a crime against humanity. I'm actually certain that that shirt should be in the Hague, facing human rights violations, because it is absolutely disgusting. And Nike is slightly worried about it. Aside from last year's one, where it had the novelty of no sponsor and it was actually all right, have Nike ever produced a good home shirt for Chelsea?
Nothing that has ever come close to the greats of Umbro or Adidas. Like, there's never been a... I did like a big kit ranking over the summer, like a tier list, right? And it went back, I want to say, I started around the 80s and all the way up to modern day. And yeah, there's very few... There's been a few, like, it's not like all the ones of Nike have been crap. Like, there have been some decent ones that I've enjoyed. But yeah, nothing that I think in 20 years time are going to be ones that people are like, yeah, this was a shirt that you kind of had to be. The streets won't forget this shirt. I think the streets have already forgotten a lot of the Nike shirts. I just find it quite absurd, really. The price point is, of course, an issue. But it's not just a Chelsea issue. It's a Premier League wide problem. I think the average price of shirts, unsurprisingly, when the Premier League started in 92, was around 35 quid. And of course, it's jumped up to getting now closer and closer, it feels like, every single year, to the standard home shirt being over 100 quid. Because, and you got to factor in that, you know, if you buy, it's already 85 quid. That's just the standard one. They call it the stadium one. And then you have effectively the player one that's already over 100 quid. And with the 80 quid one, if people are buying and getting a name on the back of their shirt, that's probably already taking you over 100 quid. So this is a major issue. I mean, even the cheapest, I think, in the Premier League is 50 quid, I want to say, if I remember rightly. That's Wolves. So still, it's not exactly that cheap. And from the anecdotal evidence of my comments and people I speak to, yeah, the kits are just, the quality isn't there to justify that price. The price is exorbitant to begin with. They are releasing these kits so quickly every year that it's very hard to feel like it's worth getting the kit, because if you don't get it literally on the release day, the expiry date on it wears out very quickly. And I don't think it's got anything to do with Chelsea's sponsorship problem, which I think we've discussed on the pod, and I am critical of the club for that, but that is not the reason that kit is not selling. Actually, you speak to a lot of fans, football fans in general, and they like no sponsor kits because there's a novelty to it, as you've already addressed. The idea that it's a given that these kits have to be terrible every year, I just find really depressing. Like, they have to be so manufactured, so lacking any quality or connection, is just it's so frustrating that when I see glimmers of kits that are either close to being brilliant, or in the case of that 1970 FA Cup anniversary kit that sold out so quickly at Chelsea a few years ago, that was made in the Nike era, it shows you that people will go out there. Last season's kit was a success because it touched on Chelsea's history. There was a bit of nostalgia to it. And of course, you factor in a no sponsor. But I think it was also a lot of the nostalgia. It was a better quality kit. Probably Nike's best kit, in my opinion, that they've made, home shirt they've made for Chelsea. If it's there, people will go out and get it. And it's so frustrating that you see Adidas doing a lot of retro stuff right now. And a lot of kits for these other clubs are doing well, and fans are connecting to it. Probably still costing you the same amount, but at the very least, the quality is a bit better, so you can kind of justify it, and there is a bit more reason to go out there and get it if you're feeling like this is actually quite a unique shirt, and it does connect with our history as a club. nothing about the home shirt. I refuse to call it a Chelsea shirt because it's not a Chelsea shirt. There is nothing within that shirt that it's connects not. To Chelsea's history. It's not. It's a. If I'd be less annoyed if that shirt didn't have a Chelsea badge on it and was just a Nike shirt that they sold, you know, in their retail stores across the world. Like, I'd have no problem with it. It's not a Chelsea shirt. There is absolutely nothing in the design of that shirt that reflects anything to do with our history, of our culture, with what the club's main colours are. When did orange become a colour within Chelsea? I've clearly lost that memo. So, yeah, I'm rambling, but it is a bugbear of mine, especially when I know how much, especially, I guess, parents who have kids, even my parents, but my parents, when I was young, didn't have to spend as much as parents do nowadays for to buy Chelsea shirts for kids. And kids obviously want to get the shirt. They want to get Cole Palmer on the back of their shirt. And I know, obviously, there is a price difference between the adult shirt that I looked at for £84 and the youngster kit. But that's still costing you a bit, and especially if kids want all of the shirts every year. I mean, it's brutal. It really is.
Yeah, no, it's that sort of stuff which drives me insane. But I mean, like, the you touched on the important thing there. I think the difference between what Adidas and Nike are producing right now. That Chelsea shirt, unless Chelsea win something in it major, which we're not going to, let's be honest. If Chelsea won the Premier League in it, I think that'd be a different conversation, but we're not going to do that. I don't think the Conference League is enough of an honour for us to be thinking, oh, that's a shirt we're going to keep forever and it's going to be going down in history as a massive part of Chelsea's, you know, shirt heritage, I should say. The Adidas shirts that they're creating now and curating are actually built not just as a fashion piece, but also with the heritage of Adidas and those clubs woven together, which means with the fact they, for example, in the third shirts brought back the trefoil on those shirts and being the third shirt and the first time they've done it in years means that those shirts will hold value for an eternity. I mean, obviously people can't see behind us because obviously we're audio only currently, but don't worry, that'll be changing soon. I've got a Modena shirt hanging up on my door right now, which obviously holds value. It's the only shirt they had from the season in the Serie A. It's match worn. John Mensah, Sunderland great, Ghana captain, was the only one they're going. But even that, for example, that holds value to a lot of people. I got offered €300 for that in the stadium. I had no other shirt on, Dan, but people wanted to pay €300 for that shirt. And overall, just it's those sort of things where things that hold cultural value and hold heritage and have an understanding and are intrinsically linked, people will buy. The shirt this season, people have no interest in it. Anyone I speak to has no interest in it because, one, it's hideous. And two, as you said, it doesn't relate to us in any way. It was just you could tell they were clutching at straws in their marketing strategy, or they've got someone who's doing their GCSE English exam to do it. Oh, the flames represent the fires of the youth of London. No, it doesn't. No one cares about that. It doesn't make any sense. Like, no one likes the shirt. It's rubbish. The marketing campaign for it was great. It looked really sharp. But the best Chelsea marketing campaign I've ever seen was "It's blue. What else matters?" Adidas 13-14 shirt. So simple, so clean. And that's the beauty of those shirts. That is the last Chelsea shirt I can say happily that I feel was a good shirt. I don't think the shirt from the 14-15 season was good, where we won with Mourinho. And this is including shirts in the Adidas era, by the way, guys. You know, I'm very tough on this sort of thing. As a man who has been given the title of creating the best shirt in non-league about 5 years ago, but still counts. You know, Dan somehow, he said he'd dig it out, and I still don't see that Imperial Wolf shirt in your background, Dan. Just going to raise that quickly.
I'll have it soon. Don't worry.
But, you know, you look at it, I think the 14-15 shirt, obviously I've got it behind me up on my wall. That's because that was my 18th birthday present. You know, it's my shirt in there, along with the champion shirt. 15-16, I thought, was a hideous shirt with a button. 16-17, I just thought it looked like a pair of pyjamas. And then, obviously, the Nike era started. That first shirt was just boring and rubbish. The second shirt looked like the shirt from the year before had self-harmed. And then after that, it's just a case of everything else. The shirts, I don't think, since, have been good. Obviously, the 19-20 shirt, Lampard season, oh, my God. You know, I never thought that could be topped in terms of how hideous it was. I stand corrected.
The one we won the Champions League in was all right, to be fair.
It was all right, but I wasn't looking at it going, oh, yeah, it's amazing. The thing is, if that shirt, instead of having a dark blue navy collar, if that had a white collar, I think that would have been really nice. Yeah.
I just don't understand. Like, for me, and I know some people disagree, but to me, the greatest Chelsea shirt ever created, and I'm always going to be biased because it's my first Chelsea shirt, which is the 04, well, it's the 03 to 05 home shirt with Fly Emirates. And the beauty of that shirt that was replicated by the one you spoke about, the 13-14 Adidas shirt, is the simplicity of it. Is it's white collar, a bit of white on the sleeves, but it's mainly royal blue. It's not trying to be outlandish. It's not trying to be original. It's just taking the base colours of Chelsea Football Club and making a pretty simple shirt that stands out. And it's miles and miles better than what gets concocted now. And I've spoken to people who even work at Chelsea who admit that, especially in the marketing side of things, like when we talk about Nike, when we talk about these, you know, fashion brands, basically, it is a lot of the kits and the way they're marketed are not marketed to your average fan. They're marketed to a kind of bourgeois, you know, very trendy. I don't want to pinpoint a certain area in London because it's unfair, but it's like it's made for people who I don't think are your average football fan, you know, and maybe you accuse both of us of being in this category, even though I don't like the word, you know, influencer types who, you know, it's for me, a football shirt should be a lot more than just a nice fashion item. Like, but maybe maybe we're both being too sentimental about it.
I don't think we are.
And I always but if you don't like the home shirt, the pragmatic way to go about it is either spend that money on retro shirts, go abroad. If you're going abroad and you do some football tourism and you go to other clubs, maybe invest in their home shirt if you like it, which I don't think is a bad idea. I've done some of that myself with the Hudson-Odoi Leverkusen shirt. I'm very happy to have that. A Loftus-Cheek AC Milan shirt, an Abraham Roma shirt, you know, something like that that probably is A, better designed, and B, you know, probably actually cost a little bit less and actually feels like it has more relevance to you than a kit that I do wonder, because I stopped myself doing this because I think it was kind of like a tradition that, oh, you just go out and buy the new home shirt. And after a while, it's like, why am I buying a new home shirt? Because it's something I need. Is it actually worth the money? Is it something that is actually of value to me beyond a very short period of time? No. And whether it's going to be serious enough to stop Nike and Chelsea working together, which I know you hope and probably I hope at this point is the case, it's just a real shame that they have the ability to do better but they fail to do it on a regular basis. That's what I think is most frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being incredibly balanced. I just strongly disagree. I just think Nike have done a hideous job on every single Chelsea shirt. I don't think there's any I look at and I go, the fact we've had to go and almost clutch, go, well, we won the Champions League, it's all right. If we hadn't won anything in that shirt, no one will remember it. That's the thing. Like, no, there's nothing memorable about the designs. And, you know, I get what you're saying about the bourgeois influencer type and all that sort of stuff. And I agree, I hate the term influencer. I hate it. You know, it's just not something which I think it carries any weight at all, you know, anymore. And it shouldn't. And never, well, it did at a certain point in my life because, you know, I was an idiot and I was a child. But, you know, overall, I just think the whole idea that, you know, Nike, what they do every time, that just is shoveling it down your throats of how poor it is every time. It's got to be different every single time. It was, oh, the 1920 Lampard, oh, we've incorporated versions of the stadium into it as the designs. No, just you didn't need to do that. You know, the golden rule on kit designs, the golden rule, don't mess about with the home shirt. Keep it simple, keep it historical, keep it accurate. People enjoy the simplicity of those sort of things. Add a little touch here and there, but it doesn't need to be overdone. Away shirt, go nuts. That's my rule. I'm like, go nuts. I'd like, you can have, that could be any colour. You can have it hot pink. I don't care. You know, just let's be creative with it, and then you can let the crap juices flow there. But, you know, the home shirt, you can be creative and appeal to those influencer types, but also incorporate and understand the culture and history. And I say that, and again, I say that because I've done it. I did it. We spent months trying to craft that shirt for Imperial Wolf. And yes, Imperial Wolf isn't Chelsea Football Club. But we actually took those things out. We really like these things from historical shirts. We like this part of where we're based. We like this sort of things about how we'd like to design the shirt. We spoke to the players about how they'd like the shirt. Away shirt, we even incorporated parts of the history with that. We looked at everything and married everything up and went, what was so good about shirts? When was a good era for football shirts? And the early, obviously the 90s and early noughties are your best example of that. And you just look at it and you marry it up. And guess what? Funnily enough, retro shirts and the stars of retro shirts are very, quote unquote, in right now. Do you know why? Because Adidas have noticed that. And they've brought back the trefoil because they know that that's what sells. Nostalgia sells. So why do Nike feel the need to do what they're doing? Because in terms of what's happened with Adidas and Nike over the past, I'd say, 10 years, where Adidas looked like they were slowly getting a lot worse and Nike are really going ahead with it, it's almost like Nike got comfortable and then Adidas have now flown past them. I remember the 2018 World Cup. I think I wanted to buy every single Adidas shirt. I didn't want to touch any of the Nike shirts, apart from the England training shirt, which should have been the England home shirt. But that's another conversation for another day. And speaking of England, Dan, talk about segues. We've got to talk about a certain German becoming the manager of the England football team. Thomas Tuchel being named as the England manager. And my God, I'm so annoyed at that. It has to be an Englishman. Grr. Anger.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing that it's not an Englishman, because, I mean, there's so many good English managers that have won so many trophies, haven't there?
It's just embarrassing, Louis. It's just embarrassing.
I just can't believe that Harry Redknapp didn't get the call for winning the 2008 FA Cup. Like, it's just shocking. Like, who in their right mind, right, puts forward the statement of what they want from a manager as someone who has won trophies, has a proven track record with trophies, and then everyone goes, it should be an English manager.
I think Thomas Tuchel should personally ring up Ian Wright and have to apologise.
Oh, and Gary Neville, all of them. Just be like, okay, it should be an Englishman, all this sort of stuff. I'm aghast at some of the journalism I've seen over the past week in regards to Thomas Tuchel getting the job. I appreciate the cultural stuff, right? I appreciate why people feel the way they do. But if you look at every other country that people mention about, these are the people that they have their own people managing their countries, blah, blah, blah. Well, should I tell you why? Here's an example. I believe that to get a UEFA A license in the United Kingdom, you pay 10 times more than you do in Germany. To get all that sort of stuff laid out and for English managers to get the jobs they need to in this country, the amount that they need to fork out to prove their value is outweighed by the money that they see from other countries to go and manage abroad. Such as Saudi Arabia, Steven Gerrard being a great example of that, right? If English people want English coaches, this is on the FA. This is not on the coaches that are available right now. Because the quality of English coaches, if you put Eddie Howe against an elite manager, and I think, so I spoke to Nico. So for people that don't know, Nico used to be part of 100% Chelsea years ago. He's now got a fantastic movie podcast, by the way, and a movie YouTube channel called Silver Screen Dudes. He's been at the BFI Film Festival this week. It's been great. But me and him sat down, we had a chat about the England manager, and he's a France fan. So he's very much... he understands, because the French are in a very similar position because they don't have elite French coaches. He said, if you were to put, I mean, because it could happen in the next 2 years, an Eddie Howe or a Graham Potter or a Sean Dyche up against a Pep Guardiola Spain or a Jose Mourinho Portugal, they get wiped the floor with. And everyone's moaning about the fact that England have not won a trophy with this squad. But there is no coach that I believe could bring that. I don't think Eddie Howe is a coach. You don't want a coach in a national team job. You want a manager. You want someone who's going to get the team firing straight away, know exactly where they're going to go, lay it out and keep it simple and keep things moving forward. There's one manager that was available who could do that, and he just happened to be German. And guess what? England have got him. And I'm very happy to see it, because also he will bring England a trophy. I'm never going to say it's coming home. I'm not that guy. But I have more confidence if Thomas Tuchel's England took on Pep Guardiola's Spain, that is going to be a 50-50 game. I believe that something will happen there. Because he's an elite coach and he was available. And also, he loves the UK. He loves England. I think it's fair to say he integrated so easily into the culture and assimilated with everybody and grew with it. And I think the beauty of England, people talk about England for the English. I'm just describing it as gammons, right? Because that's what it is. It's gammons in some of the UK press. And some journalists, by the way, I'm saying this now, I know, and we all know, that they didn't ask those questions because that's what they believe. It's what gets clicks. Completely understand that, right? But as somebody whose family immigrated to the UK and grew into the culture and brought their own bit to it and their own things, you know, it's, you could say that about so many people. Even looking at the team, Cole Palmer, England's best player right now. St. Kitts and Nevis is where his family's from. Bukayo Saka, Nigeria. Harry Kane, Ireland, I think. Stuff like all this sort of stuff. I think the only player that's actually English completely is Jordan Pickford and John Stones. I think that's it. But that's the beauty of this nation. And that's why it's so fantastic that everyone can come together and give their own bits of culture and they can explore it all together. I think if no one's listened to it, I think a good example of why the UK is so great and England is so great was an interview by a caller on LBC a few months ago. And it was a guy, he was a doorman, and he was talking about how obviously he isn't the sort of person people would look at and think, you know, he's very appreciative of English culture. But he talks about how he'd go to the park and sit with the Jamaicans and have their food and try their stuff. He'd go see the Indians, or there'd be a lovely, you know, there'd be a Muslim family who would, he'd walk down the road, he'd say hello, they'd have a conversation, they'd invite him to their events. You know, it's this sort of stuff where if you appreciate how far the UK has grown and don't look so insular just culturally, I think it's amazing to see the growth. And I appreciate that having a German manager might not be to everyone's taste. And yes, you are going to get the jokes, all right? I completely get it. I'm taking the mickey out of it right now all the time when we talk about it, where it's about, you've got a German manager in England, 2 World Wars, 1 World Cup, blah, blah, blah. I say it as a joke. There are people that take that seriously. Like, that is what worries me about the amount of people that are taking that seriously and sort of saying, well, you know, England shouldn't have a German manager. When Sir Steve Redgrave won Olympic gold, he had a German coach. The manager who won England the Euros for the women's team was Dutch. It's not going to make me feel any different about the 11 players on the pitch. If anything, right, I want Thomas Tuchel to get his passport. I want him to get given the status of Sir Thomas Tuchel by the king, right, because he'll win England the World Cup. And that's all that matters. I'm done ranting, Dan. Anything you want to add to that?
Not much. I mean, I do find, I respect Sam Wallace from The Telegraph, and I think he does a lot of good journalism, but you know, a lot of people were sort of clowning him, and I think kind of rightly so, that there were two pieces that he, I think Jason Burt was a part of the first one, but the first one was about when Pep Guardiola was being linked, and oh, how wonderful, how adventurous this would be, this appointment. And literally like 2 days later, he's penning a piece. I'm sorry, but Thomas Tuchel should not be England head coach. And, you know, there's a part of me that doesn't want to delve into this, but we are a Chelsea podcast, so let's be a little bit tribal and biased here. I just cannot believe that if Jurgen Klopp or Pep Guardiola had taken the job, it would be as strong as it is for Tuchel. And that's because my very tribal anti-Chelsea bias in the media narrative kind of came back up, because I just felt it was just like one of these things where it's like, I can't quite believe if it wasn't Tuchel, it would be to the same fervor. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But that was kind of my first instinct, as I say, very Chelsea biased there. But that was kind of my first gut reaction, especially the turn in narrative so quickly. As I said, you know, a couple of days ago, oh, it could be Pep. And then literally the morning of him being appointed, I can imagine, because I've worked for football sites, right? And I know how these things kind of work out, where I can imagine the editors have gone to their main writers across the nation the morning Tuchel was appointed and said, we need a strong opinion piece about this. And that's how it leads to opinion pieces. Listen, if you're someone that's a traditionalist who believes that international football is. And to be fair to Sam Wallace, in that piece, he does lay out that the tradition of international football should be that it isn't like the club game, that it is about the best of a nation versus the best of another nation. But the reality is, people have listed these out, that England are not an abomination or an anomaly within getting coaches that are not from their country to manage their international team, as you've just laid out. Now, I think in terms of Tuchel as New England head coach, I think it's a perfect appointment. I have felt strongly for a while that Tuchel needs to go into international football. I actually think Nagelsmann should be at Bayern and Tuchel should be the German head coach, actually, because Tuchel is a tournament specialist. He is someone that I think thrives in an environment where it's a little bit more short term, it's a little bit more reactive, and it's about counteracting the strengths of stronger teams. That isn't to say that England will always carp against Spain and Germany. Like, that will only happen once or twice. But I think that gives Tuchel an edge in these games, and I think will create a siege mentality that he did so wonderfully at Chelsea in a short period of time. Because at Chelsea, his great strength was always counteracting opponents that were difficult for Chelsea. That is where Tuchel as a coach was elevated. That's where we saw and why he has gained the reputation as one of Europe's best coaches. I think the criticism of Tuchel from me and others has always been over the course of a league season, when you can't play in the same manner, when you come up against teams that sit a lot deeper, who ask you to break them down, who ask you to answer questions. I don't think he's always been the best at coming up with those solutions, but I think in the nature of international football, especially knockout international football, I think he could make such a big difference in ways that I don't think we've seen at the international level. And I think Tuchel as well is someone that, you know, people have questioned his motives. You know, is he in it just for himself? I couldn't care less, to be honest, because if his self-motivation to be successful leads England to a World Cup, I don't care what anyone says. He will be knighted. He will be cherished as one of the most impactful coaches in English football history. And I love the fact that I get to listen to him more regularly, because I thought he was one of the best speakers we've ever seen at Chelsea. So it was great. On a number of, like, for Chelsea fans, English Chelsea fans, of course, it's kind of a double win, right? Because I think you're getting a great coach, probably the best on the market you could get currently, coupled with, of course, a coach that we have very fond memories with. So I think a lot of it will die down very quickly. And if Tuchel starts winning, I can't believe there will still be people now complaining. I can't believe Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher will still be saying it's embarrassing if England are winning an international tournament. They just won't. I just don't buy it. It's an outrage for clicks on a couple of days.
No, but see, that's what really, really, really annoyed me. And it's Danny Mills as well, by the way. I think was it 18 caps for England? Let me just double check that for you quickly. Danny Mills was saying how it's a disgrace that you got a German manager in England, or sort of like having a foreigner manager in England is insane. When all of his caps, by the way, all 19 of his England caps came under Sven Goran Eriksson. Every single one. It's and these players say, oh, I shouldn't have a foreign manager managing. It's like, well, you got a lot of your caps under Sven Goran Eriksson, under Fabio Capello. So why don't you go give those caps back to the FA if you feel that strongly about it? But no, you don't. You don't feel that strongly about it, because guess what? You got your England cap. You're proud you played for England, and that's what matters. Look, if I could be being managed by, I don't know, someone from Madagascar. I don't care. If I was playing for England and I got given my England cap, I'd be very proud of that, because I'd be playing for the country that I'd want to represent. And yes, that's right. I want to play for England, and I'm an England fan. I'm not an Italy fan. That's what everyone likes to say.
But another point as well, I saw Sam Wallace make the argument that, well, you know, we don't want to see a scenario where you can go and buy a better left back than we have. And it's like, Sam, I'm sorry, that's an absurd argument, because that's not going to happen. International football, England can't go and buy someone from Spain. That's not how it works. That's not how the international football works. So it's like, you're bringing up all these cases that Thomas Tuchel becoming England head coach is somehow going to unravel the logic of international football, as if this is like some groundbreaking thing that we've never seen before. Sven Goran Eriksson his life was rightly cherished, and it was wonderful to see the tributes. And it's just weird to me, because a few weeks ago a lot of people were talking about Sven and his legacy and what he did at England, and people talking about how fondly England players enjoying their time working under him. And then a few weeks later, it's this is the worst thing that's ever happened when another foreign head coach comes in. It's like with a lot of things with football media, right? I just would like a lot more honesty and a lot more just transparency and consistency with people's arguments. If you have always strongly believed that, I have respect for people, if you have been always principled and consistent that you believe that England should be managed, or a national team, international teams should be managed by coaches from that nation, then I respect your opinion. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I respect it because it's consistent. If you have flipped in the last like couple of days because you're a media pundit who has to say outlandish things to get clicks, then I have no respect for you, because it's quite clear why you're saying those things. And it's quite clear that you're only doing it to get a rise out of people. And it's those type of arguments that I never have time for, because they're just dishonest and they don't help the conversation. They don't progress it in any way. And I think Tuchel hopefully will prove all of those people wrong, will make all of these quotes look stupid. And I'm very excited to see what he'll do from next year moving forward.
I am as well. So that's what we want to hear. And that's obviously what you're going to get from us. And I think Dan put his finger on the button with the Siege mentality, because when he said, get the second star on our shirt, I had the same feeling I had when he talked about the seven seats to go to Lille. But, you know, that's our thoughts, Thomas Tuchel. Obviously, let us know your thoughts in the comments section as well on the podcast, listening on Spotify, because we'd love to hear what you have to say about that. But we have gone on quite a significant tangent and quite a significant period not talking about Chelsea's game at Anfield. But before me and Dan give you our thoughts, it's time we jump to the best section of the show in some people's eyes, because it's got a great jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
So, after another, I would say, unnecessary international break, although it's proven to be Lee Carsey's penultimate international break, because a good friend of ours, Thomas Tuchel, is returning in January, so at least we only have to watch Lee Carsey's football one more time before we get to see Thomas Tuchel's England. That is by the by. We're back, is what I was going to say, into club football, and Chelsea could not have a much bigger test than a trip to Anfield and Liverpool. Enzo Maresca's biggest test, I would say. Well, you know, we have played to Manchester City, but Liverpool away, I think, is a real barometer test of exactly where Chelsea are at the moment. And so we face Liverpool, and with a record, or a negative record, actually, 196 games played between these two teams. Chelsea have won 65, have drawn 46, and Liverpool have currently won 86 of those clashes. So work to do for the Blues in this game. The Blues' recent record against Liverpool also is a bit of a tragic one by all accounts, winning only one of the last 10 clashes between these two sides in all competitions, and that was back in March 2021, which was the 10th most recent game against these two sides. So we've gone 9 games without winning against Liverpool. Mason Mount scored the winning goal in that game. Our times have changed, and the Blues, as I say, have not beaten Liverpool since 90 minutes of football. So after 90 minutes of football, however, between these two sides, only once has Liverpool actually come away with the win, and I'll explain that now. That, of course, does allude to the fact that Chelsea have drawn 0-0 in 3 finals against Liverpool, 2 League Cup finals and an FA Cup final in February 2022 and 2024 being the League Cup finals, and May of 2022 being the FA Cup final. The Reds, annoyingly, would go on to win all 3 of those finals under Jurgen Klopp, twice on penalties and once last season when Virgil van Dijk scored in extra time. So, yeah, frustration there. But actually, despite the very negative record and the red, when you look at the fixtures, actually only once have Chelsea actually been beaten in 90 minutes. And as I say, that was last season when losing 4-1. At Anfield, some revenge, hopefully, on the cards for these players. Onto the manager record, Enzo Maresca has managed against Liverpool on one occasion. He has managed against them before, though, which is rare. It was a 3-1 defeat in last season's League Cup third round when he was managing at Leicester. He did take the lead in the third minute and led into half time, but then Liverpool proved too good for Leicester last season. He now heads to Anfield looking to earn his first win against Liverpool, and he will be up against another bald man in Arne Slot, who welcomes Chelsea to Anfield in his biggest test yet, and having not managed against Chelsea before. It's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Dan, thoughts on stats?
Numbers.
Yep, sweet, fantastic. Let's move straight into our thoughts on the game. Dan, can Chelsea get the result at Anfield?
It's going to be tough. It's probably one of the toughest fixtures we could have had coming out of this international break. Obviously, Liverpool have done a lot better than I think a lot of people anticipated, given the change in head coach, given Klopp having such a strong influence on that club for a number of years. I think Slot's obviously, the transition to him has been pretty seamless, and they're playing a style of football that defensively is keeping them very solid, but also from an attacking point of view, they're being very productive. And I did feel in the summer, actually, you just looked at Liverpool's squad, it wasn't that disrupted. They still have some high caliber players that will probably help them win a majority of games. Might not mean they win the Premier League, but we'll get them probably in the top four. So I'm not entirely shocked they are strong under Slot. I think it's just the fact that they are top of the league currently. And I think defensively too, that's been a big improvement under Slot. So for Maresca, it's a big challenge. It really is. I think that for him, obviously, Maresca now enters a different phase of games where Chelsea are playing teams that are big and are going to be much more scrutinised. A lot of them are on TV and will come under the microscope. These are games that obviously gain a lot more traction and I think are a lot more weighty in people's minds, even if at times that can be a little bit unfair, because, you know, if Chelsea get beaten by Liverpool but then, you know, win, I don't know, four of the next five games, you know, that's not the end of the world. And I do firmly believe that, you know, it's not a case that if Chelsea fail to win on Sunday, it's a disaster. I think for me, when I contrast this game and my kind of hope for it versus what I saw against Man City, I think one of the demoralising things about the City game was the fact that it felt like City didn't even have to get out of first gear and they still kind of comfortably beat Chelsea.
Mm.
I think a lot more people will accept Chelsea narrowly losing to Liverpool. It won't be nice. It's never. I hate losing. I hate losing to Liverpool. But I think people will accept that a bit more, or at least understand it a bit more, than a game where we kind of comfortably lose 2-0. We don't really attack them that much. Our best threats don't kind of hurt them or threaten them in any kind of way. That's, I think, the big distinction for me with a game like this. And upcoming games as well. Like, obviously, we're facing Arsenal in a few weeks. But it can't just be looked at with dread. Obviously, I think we've only won once there in, I want to say it's coming up to a decade. Obviously, it was the COVID season when we won there. And I want to say maybe the last time we won at Anfield in the league was the Costa and Cahill scoring 2-1 in like November 2014. So we haven't won at Anfield in the league consistently. And listen, is that something you should expect? Probably not. But it's obviously been a very tough ground, and it is for a lot of teams. So it should be seen as an opportunity for Chelsea to maybe prove people wrong, to add a bit of a statement. Because you think if Chelsea even walk away with a point on Sunday, that will be seen in some way as a bit of progress. And I think a lot of people would go, that's a decent result. And if you can win, incredible.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for me. I think after seeing us be so unsuccessful at Liverpool for such a long time, that's a big thing where I kind of wanted to be like, right, well, I want that to end. And I, like you're saying, I feel very different to this game to what I feel to the City game. And I also think that's thanks to Nottingham Forest after they got the result at Anfield and showed what you can do to beat Liverpool. And I think it's a good blueprint on how to, you know, take on that side. So, you know, I'm really hoping that Chelsea can go and do what they need to do and get a result. And I mean, look, a draw would be big. I think it'd be a step in the right direction. A win would be massive. But the biggest thing that's important to me is that Chelsea show that there is some sense of capability in this fixture. I think it's all well and good us, you know, looking like we're playing really well, but this is now our toughest run. That is what I'm now concerned by. It's the fact that we're now on this run for a period against Newcastle, against Manchester United, against Liverpool, against a lot of sides which Chelsea can be fighting for Champions League places for. So, you know, I'd like to think that the deliverables can be made. I'd like to think that Chelsea can go and get a result here. And I think if they do, it will show a massive step in the right direction. And if Chelsea can win, and by the way, I mean, look, let's just take City out of the equation. They are light years ahead of us. But I think Chelsea can get a result against Arsenal at the minute. I think we can get results against Liverpool. I think we can get results against Man United. I think we can get results against Spurs. I think all these teams which Chelsea can be vying for those European places for, I think we can all take on and beat. But that may also be down to the fact that I'm still on a high from how well we've been playing over the past few games. So this is the game where Chelsea now need to set their benchmark. And I really think that they can do it. And I'm very excited to see what will happen and if it can happen. Because I think that what Chelsea have been doing over the past few weeks has proved a lot of people wrong and shown that they have serious capabilities to actually challenge these teams. And I think can secure a place in the top four. Despite my extremely negative outlook over the past, 18 months? And probably even at the beginning of the season with Dan, I was known as the glass half empty guy. So we'll have to see what happens with that one. But Dan, now that you've heard how extremely positive I was, let's jump straight into the Echo 11. Is it just going to be the same team that played against Nottingham Forest and we just like wrap it up there? Or is there any changes you'd make to that team? Well, actually there are, to be fair, because we have to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's going to be some enforced changes. Kukurea and Fofana are out, obviously, suspension. We're obviously, as we usually do, we record these before Maresca's presser, so he may have some nasty surprises in store in terms of potential injuries, but it seems like most of the players have come through unscathed, which is good from the international break, even though we had players like limping off at the end of the Forest game. I think the big question will obviously be Reece James. Obviously, he's now back training, but I don't think he'll be thrown into this game. When he starts playing, that, I mean, listen, we could make a whole separate podcast about Reece James. So I think Gusto will remain in the team. I think there are a couple questions, right? Over the international break, I made a show about Fernandes, who I don't think has had a good start to the season, but I think he'll keep his place. Even though I'd be intrigued to see Lavia and Caicedo as a midfield two in a game like this, and whether that would give Chelsea a bit more protection and mobility in central midfield, which has been a concern so far this year. And I think the only other thing is Nkunku, right? Like, I think Nkunku's been banging on the door for quite a while now, and Jackson, unfortunately, I don't think has had some great performances recently. It's not he's been terrible, but I think the Forest game was arguably his poorest performance so far this season. So maybe there's an argument in a game of this nature in Nkunku to start, but is there a real reason for radical change? I'm still not entirely sure, because as both of us are, we're a little bit more positive about recent performances, but obviously he will have to make two significant changes in his defence. I mean, I personally think Tosin should come in for Fofana and Vega coming in for Kukurea. Those are the two changes, I think, obvious ones, right?
Absolutely. No, I agree. I think that's the only changes I wrote my squad down. That is the only changes I'd make. I think I'd like to say that Christopher Nkunku gets into the side, because you're absolutely right, he's been knocking on the door. But I just think in terms of how we play in the Premier League especially, I think having Nicholas Jackson there is so important, because he does a lot of work off the ball as well as on it. And I think that physicality is going to be a big thing, because I feel like coming up against Virgil van Dijk, I'd like to think that Nicholas Jackson can... He's not going to occupy him, and he's not going to occupy both the centre-backs, because they're great centre-backs, but he'll cause more of a problem physically than Christopher Nkunku will, and it's going to be those fine margins which I think can really help us in this game. So for me, yeah, I'd only make those two changes, and my 11 would remain the same.
No, I agree with that. I think it's a fair point of view. And again, we walk into a run of games now that are going to be intense. Obviously, after Liverpool, it's Panathinaikos away. I think it's then Newcastle at home, Newcastle away, Man United away. They may, I think there's probably another Conference League game after that before we face Arsenal at home. So there is a lot of games. We're entering now. Obviously, we've got one more international break in November. But after that, you enter really the most intense period of the season. So Maresca is going to have to shuffle his deck smartly. And I think there is going to be absolutely room for a guy like Nkunku to start a game. But I'm not going to be that angry if he doesn't start this one, to be honest.
No, I agree. That's exactly where I'm at as well. But that is it, ladies and gents. Opinions have been said from myself and Dan. So now you need to hear everything else from the bald man. Ladies and gentlemen, let's head over to the press conference and hear what Enzo Maresca has to say.
Enzo, what team news have you got for us? Any players returning? Any fresh injury worries after the international break?
No. Finally, we are all available. So we have all the squad available, unless the suspended one.
What goes into your thinking there? Because you have to make two enforced changes in a back four.
Yeah, it's not a problem. I said since we start that I'm very happy with the squad. I'm very happy with the players that we are using. Since we start, we try to share a little bit minutes between all the competition we have. And so we have two suspended players that they are not able to play. We're gonna find different players that they can play.
Will Rhys James be in the squad for Sunday?
He's available. Yeah, finally he's back. He worked with us all the international break, and it's a good news, especially for him, because being injured is not a good feeling. So finally he's back.
It's been so difficult for him, for any athlete, to continually come back and get injured again. What have you done different as a medical team, as a club this time? And do you feel that this is different, or is it difficult to know that and predict that?
No, it's always complicated when you get injury again. It's not easy, so you are always looking for a solution. Probably the solution with Rhys is the same solution we are using with Romeo and Wes, in terms of using them just once a week, one game, because probably in this moment, for different reason, Rhys body cannot play, for instance, twice a week. So probably one of the solution is that we're gonna try to manage him in the same way we are doing with Wes and Romeo.
Given the unbeaten run that the team is on at the moment, your manager of the month, Cole Palmer, player of the month, it feels like the team is enjoying a good spell. How much are you relishing this run of tough Premier League fixtures over the next four games, starting with Liverpool at Anfield, which has always been quite a special fixture for Chelsea fans?
I think it's especially a game for all the clubs. Liverpool is nice environment, fantastic. We are excited to play this kind of game, but in the same time, I think all the games that we played until now, no one of them has been easy. All the Premier League games, they are difficult, they are not easy. And as I said, we're gonna try to do our best and prepare the game in the best way we can and try to get points.
Liverpool away this weekend. Arne Slot obviously inherited a very good group of players, a very good solid foundation over there. But were you surprised with the way both Arne Slot and the players managed to adapt to the new reality so quickly? Because it looks very, very promising.
Yeah, they are doing fantastic. Very good players, very good manager, very good club, and I think they are doing a fantastic job. But it's already many years that Liverpool is there, so it's continuing to do that, and I think it's something very, very, very important for them.
And Liverpool away, will this be a chance to gauge where you are in your progress coming up against a title challenger?
We're going to approach the game not thinking where we are. We're going to approach the game trying to prepare the game in the best way. And as I said, try to get points there. But it's not this game that is going to define where we are. If we win, we solve all the problem. And in case we lose, no, it's just It's just a process, it's just a game, and as I said, we're going to try to do our best and prepare the game.
Talked about the tough run of fixtures coming up. Next three out of the next four Premier League games, you face Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal. People may be talking about it being the first real test that Chelsea have had under your leadership. What are you hoping to see from some of those big games over the next few weeks?
I said I don't think that Sunday game define a little bit where we are. I think in this moment we have to be focused on things that we want to improve. That is the most important thing. As you said, the first game is Liverpool, then we have 2-3 more games. But I don't know the feeling that Nottingham was easy game, or Brighton was easy game, or West Ham away, or Bournemouth away was easy game. I think the Premier League is probably the best league in the world, and it's because it's the tough league in the world. So every game is difficult, and it will be exactly the same in the next 3 or 4, or in the next 25 games that we have.
Opinions have been stated, numbers have been said, and less important things have been discussed. But ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Chelsea Echo and your preview for Chelsea's trip to Anfield. Make sure you tune into Final Score with the Score after the game. I am not going to be at the fixture as I have some family commitments this weekend, which means the Torres PIE remains on hold, which is slightly annoying, but you know, we're figuring our way out around it. But make sure you tune into Final Score to hear my thoughts on the game with the Score. Of course, as well, make sure you check out all of Dan's great stuff over on Son of Chelsea. And if you're new around here, make sure you stick around for the next one. And if you're not, give us a cheeky 5-star review. Come on, you've been here long enough. Why haven't you done it yet? We'll take care of yourselves, guys, and we'll see you soon. Ta-da.